Pickaxe.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Triforce podcast. I was really excited to wake up this morning and see how much stuff had been blown off of Florida.
Oh, my God.
The place needed a bit of a wash, honestly. Too soon.
You should not make light of a gigantic hurricane.
What is wrong with you, man?
A lot of
what is wrong with you?
I have family living down there in Florida.
Well, in fact, I've got friends who are there right now. And also,
Bubba's from Florida.
That rapper Florida is from Florida as well.
He's been blown away.
I thought it was Flo Rida. Is it pronounced Florida? Mr. Florida.
It's open lovely to interpretation, obviously.
Mr. Rida.
Mr. Rida. Do I call you Flo?
No, it's scary stuff. I mean, I think some of my friends are also in Disneyland at the moment.
Jesus. Well, they were.
Well, it's closed. It's closed for the 11th time ever because of this hurricane. So.
Well, they are sheltering in their hotel, I guess.
Right.
The Florida, they have hurricanes every year, right? And so Disneyland are long used. I think it's like bolted down into the core of the earth, fucking Disneyland. You know what I mean?
That's don't worry, Disney. You're safe here, kids. Oh, just Mickey gets fucking speared through the eye by a flying branch.
I'm psyched for.
I watched a video about the difference between a Cat 1 and a Cat 5 hurricane, Category 1 and Category 5. They're called Cat 5. They had the guys standing in front of a house, like your average American house. Category one, you're going to lose some of, they call it shingles, right? Like roof tiles, basically. You're going to blow off the roof and some trees will be swaying. A couple of things will be blown around. Your bins will get knocked around. You might lose something. You might lose a window to some flying debris. But by category five, the sides of the house are just peeling away. The roof is blown off. All the windows blow in. The doors blow in. Nothing. This house is just totaled.
Oh my God, it's like a nuke.
It's bad. Like the wind is so strong and there's so much debris in the air. All the trees are flattened. Loads of buildings get knocked over. And you then have to contend with what they call is it a storm swell or a storm surge where the water level goes up. And it's like a mini tsunami. The water just comes in. So, I mean, the amazing thing to me is that this is genuinely like a once a century storm. Well, it used to be once a century storm. They're coming with more frequency now. The Atlantic in that region, very warm, causing all these big storms. It's like hurricane after hurricane, hurricane season in Florida, but it's getting more and more dramatic. There's still people saying, oh, I'm just going to stay. It'll be fine. And they're driving around in these trucks with these loudspeakers saying, if you stay here, you will die. Leave. And they're just like, I ain't going nowhere. And then at the last minute, they're like, shit, maybe this is going to be bad. And then all the petrol stations are out of petrol and the roads are jammed. There's people trying to escape. It's crazy. I don't know how. I would just live in a bunker at this point if I lived in Florida, I think.
Weather weapons have come a long way since they were first introduced. I mean, they are terrifying now.
That was Marjorie Taylor Greene said that.
The first weather weapon ever used pales in comparison to modern day weather weapons.
Yeah, modern day weather weapons.
Weather weapons.
They've been testing the rain weather weapon on the UK for years.
It's a bit like the red matter bomb. It's just the weather weapon that keeps on giving.
She said she showed a map of the path of the hurricane, and it's mainly going through like Republican areas. And she's like, "Don't tell me they don't control the weather. It's so obvious that they do." And it's like, well, "What are you talking about? Like, it's just you." I would suggest that the South is a slightly more likely to vote Republican, and it's also warmer and near the sort of hurricane area. It's that. But she's like an elected official saying that someone is controlling the weather to kill Republican voters. It's insane. It's insane what people are saying these days.
It's funny. It's, I mean, it is like, it's a tropical storm, right? In a tropical area. It's like, this is one of the downsides of living in Florida. Yeah. Yes, you get sunny weather all year round. And yeah, it's a humid, fucking sweaty ball sack most of the year. But it's also, you know, this is what you, people, it's not like it hasn't happened before, is all I'm saying, you know.
Yeah. Although it could be worse. Because the BBC weather app,
it could be a volcano as well.
The BBC weather app said that we would be facing winds of up to 15,759 miles an hour in the UK. Yeah,
is that high?
No, it's just a glitch in their app. 15,000 miles.
Sometimes people say these numbers to me, and I'm like, not sure whether they're high or not. It's like, today's humidity is 65. I'm like, is that high? Is that low?
Yeah,
like,
I
have no frame of reference for that number.
But there was like, a glitch in the BBC weather app that suggested we'd be facing near 16,000 mile an hour winds. I think at that level, that's like, that would strip you to the bone instantly.
You're going to need some goggles for that.
Yeah, yeah. Need some goggles.
I think it was also, it also said it was like 150 degrees centigrade.
Oh, I love it.
It's like, it's like, instantly, your body will just boil off.
You will boil alive and then be flayed by the winds.
Yes.
I ain't going nowhere. 16,000 mile an hour winds are not.
I just want to, sorry to change the subject. I just want to share with you, somebody sent me something.
Oh,
I haven't,
my God. Okay.
This is the first time I've been sent something in a while. Is it
greasy?
No,
if it's greasy on the outside, that can be a sign of
it's about
of explosive.
Something greasy.
Okay.
Is it ticking? Yeah.
You guys can guess in a second. I just want to say I get things from time to time, but normally like around my birthday or Christmas, you know, there's a couple of people that will send me bits and pieces like mugs and shirts and stuff like that. But this one was like out of the blue. This was a random one from a guy called Oz. It was beautifully gift wrapped, delivered by Amazon. It came in like a nice little bag with a bow and everything. And it's
so that is the Amazon gift wrapping. You can order that. You can request that.
And it's a book. It is a book that with pages that I can read. And the book is called How to Live with a Huge Penis.
Right.
Yeah.
Advice,
meditations, and wisdom for men who have too much. It's written by a doctor and a reverend.
What the fuck is the reverend doing?
Yeah, is bigger really better? Here at Last is the first self-help book for men with oversized male genitalia. OMG. genetic birth defect that grows the penis to absurd proportions. Every year, thousands of men are diagnosed with OMG. Sadly, most are banished to the fringes of society, victims of their own freakish length and girth. How to Live with a Huge Penis brings them an inspiring message of tolerance and hope, along with helpful information on unzipping. It's a bullet pointed, this bit. Unzipping, coming out to your friends and family, sharing your pain, sexual intercourse with a huge penis, big blessings, unexpected advantages of a huge penis, and much, much more.
I'm looking forward
to reading this one.
You're looking forward. You haven't got any quotes from it? Yeah.
No, I haven't really gone through to look at quotes and stuff, but I just wanted to make you aware that it exists. And
I've just looked it up on Amazon. Impressive.
I have it. It's
impressive.
Mine.
Well done.
It's mine to cherish.
Well, there's a little advert for a little gift for everyone. Every man needs this on his shelf. You know? It's just when visitors come around, they're like,
can I catch OMG from another person?
You want to be sat in the corner of a bar reading that. Just crack that open.
I posted a quote. Can I catch OMG for another person? Read the reply.
Reverend Owen.
Read it
not.
In a priestly voice.
Absolutely not. And the stupidity of this question really pisses me off. How come everybody worries about catching a huge penis, but nobody ever says, oh, I hope I don't catch those enormous tits?
Well, I do hope that I do catch those enormous bazingas.
Oh fucking hell.
Every day.
There is someone who is sending me books about positivity in general. So I occasionally receive these books about, I don't know, how in fact, things are getting better, or like, because I have talked about this on the podcast a bit generally about reading books that are not just about doom and gloom.
Right.
And I received one recently about British politics.
Right.
From someone. Yeah, it was called like, it's not all that bad, actually, you know, how to fix the UK or something like that. And I was like, I read like a couple of chapters and I was like, oh, this is too dry.
Right.
This is too serious. I'm not fortunately in charge of policy because, oh God, it would be a disaster if I was. But I also got sent the latest fighting fantasy book.
Wow.
By a gentleman who then emailed me to check it had arrived.
Right.
But he got it signed by the writers.
The writers of fighting fantasy.
Yeah, there's a book called Dungeon on Blood Island, which we might do for Jingle Jam year. We always usually do one. And it's a brand new...
This guy's always coming onto this podcast and plugging Jingle Jam. Every week. Every week we got to hear about it.
It's going to be a big one this year. It's going to be a good one this year.
All right.
Well, I always say
That's what they say every year.
Well, because remember last time on the podcast, I was talking about it being like...
A huge flop. And wanted to sign up for anything.
Games. But fortunately, we've had a couple of lads come into my email.
Right. Well, we've had some conversations outside of this little sphere with people. And we mentioned your... apprehensions, your worries.
Thank you.
And right. Those people all sort of said, what the fuck is he talking about? We got tons of things lined up for Jingle Jam.
So
it's gonna
the
be
one
huge
I got
this
yesterday
year.
Was there was a random guy called Connor,
right,
who emailed a games company,
right,
and just I've got this email here. It's just like, hi, I hope you're doing well. My name is Connor. I'm a huge fan of this game and the incredible fun it brings to players. I'm writing to you both as a supporter of your game and a supporter of the Yogscast, a YouTube collective that hosts an annual charity event called Jingle Jam. Blah, 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 blah. I think this game would be a great addition to this year's drive. Blah, 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 blah. I sent this nice email, right?
Yeah.
And they replied.
They bit.
To him. They replied to him. And then he said, okay, I didn't expect to reply, but if you could contact the Jingle Jam at their contact... And then they contacted the Jingle Jam email, and then a week later, someone checked the Jingle Jam
email. Connor, do you want a job organizing the Jingle Jam?
Jesus.
This guy's good.
And so then someone forwarded it to me from the Jingle Jam email. But like,
this guy's real good.
Connor, honestly, like, a great job, man, helping me get through, you know, bringing joy to my life by doing that kind of stuff. I'm not suggesting everyone do it. I was thinking it could be a bit of an unethical pro-life tip of never having to pay for a game again. Because I think a lot of these devs get emails a lot, and I do sometimes, people saying, oh, can I have some keys for PlateUp? I'm the Iranian computer club or whatever they are. Or I'm the East German computer club. We're doing an event where we need 100 of your PlateUp keys. Can you send me them? And then if I do, they go on G2A, you know. Immediately. But I think there is if you're smart about it and you ask the community managers on Discord and you say you're doing a live stream, you could usually get away with getting a key for most games. Devs are very generous.
That's how I get all my keys. I can't remember the last time I bought a game. I
forwarded a key to you yesterday.
I lie to people constantly and they give me keys.
I got an email. Sometimes people write to the Yogscast email address and they say, Dear Sips.
Yeah.
And then Sophie forwards them to me.
Nice.
And I then have to be like, this one looks really cool. It's a really interesting game.
I'm glad that they don't email me directly. And then I'm glad that Sophie doesn't just send them to me directly as well. I'm glad that a couple of people have to read them first. That's good for me.
That's like having two assistants.
Yeah, I know. I'm blessed.
But yeah, look, I'm excited to offer you a game key for my standalone version of our sci-fi building sandbox cutting-edge voxel technology game. And there's a link to it for you, a key for you, Sips.
Thank you so much. Another free game.
One free game.
And the rich get richer, baby. I'm just joking.
So I'm feeling better about Jingle Jam than I was last time. Good. I was worried this year because it's like... tricky to navigate those waters, right, and walk that tightrope of asking people for generosity.
Look, listen to me, buddy. You do great work every year on this. Worrying about something means you care. That's the way I see it. So when you worry about something, it's because you actually want it to go well and you give a shit. So fair play to you.
It's my big passion. So yeah, thank you, Connor, for helping out. Thank you, everyone who's helped.
It might be Connor McGregor.
We always get like such a lot of might be. God, could you imagine? He's like, I'll fucking punch you out.
I've got a game for you. You bastard. I can't do a Conor McGregor impression, apparently.
Give me your game, you fecker.
I've got a game for you, Lewis. I've got a wee game for you. It's called Trying to Find Me Pot of Gold.
Oh, man.
I want to talk about two things, all right? First of all, this weekend, I want you guys to wish me luck.
Okay.
I'm going on a walk for
soccer. Oh, yeah. Yeah, soccer, good luck.
In the UK. 18 miles we're going to walk on Saturday. We're going to be very tired.
You're going down to Beemouth.
I am going down to the BOMO. I'm going down to
BOMO. Oh, God. 18 miles in the cold. It's cold now,
nah,
dude.
It's not cold. The wind will be at your back. 14 degrees
I went outside
cold.
Earlier. It's not actually cold.
14 degrees ain't cold. And once it goes below 10, maybe I'll put a coat on. But 14 ain't cold. Come on, that's fine. It's meant to be quite sunny as well. There's going to be a walk all around my hometown in honor of my mate Lee. And we've raised really good amount of money for it. It's like over $5,000. Just friends and family, and then I streamed for the last couple of weeks just with a link, and loads of people in my community gave very generously, which is nice. But I'm really nervous. Great. I won't be able to finish the walk, so I'm absolutely going to push myself until I collapse, because there's no way I'm not finishing this fucker.
Just bring a cheeky e-scooter in your bag.
Get some Heelys.
Get some Heely. Yeah, that's a good idea. Just to take
maybe
the edge off.
Yeah, maybe like some helium balloons. And then, you know.
Just get carried along. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Or like, what else could you do? You could have someone push you in a little sidecar.
You could use some Wonka technology, make your life a lot easier, you know?
I'll lag to the back, hop on a bus, get off a few miles down the road, and then come out of a bush when the lads go past, like I was just stopping for a pee, and they hadn't noticed that I was at the back. No, I'm just going to try and do the walk.
But, we saw something similar to that this weekend that just passed. We went, my kids did a marathon mile, like a charity mile race thing.
A marathon mile?
Yeah, it's
for little kids.
It's for little kids. They run the whole way. I'd like to see you run a mile.
Yeah,
anyway. I fucking would collapse.
Yeah, of course. So these kids, they run a mile, but then there's a grown up marathon that lasts like 2.5 hours. Well, the guy who won it in 2.5 hours because we saw him cross the line. Didn't notice him sweating or really out of breath or anything. I said this to my wife. I said, God, he's not even out of breath. He's just been running for 2.5 hours.
He wasn't sweating.
Didn't seem to be sweating from what I could tell. Yeah, it could have been Prince Andrew, yeah. And then the guy, the announcer, was like, God, this guy hasn't even broken a sweat and he's not even out of breath. And then I looked at my wife and said, he's probably just hiding in a bush near the finish line and just waited for like 2.5 hours and wandered out to win, you know? Because he didn't. You know, I mean, if I was running for 2.5 hours, I'd need to be hospitalized after. I need to be hospitalized within the first 15 minutes. This guy ran for 2.5 hours and looked fresh as a daisy. Like, looked like he just, you know.
But doing that is about keeping consistent pace. And the thing is, if he's not being challenged, do you know what I mean? If there's no like sprint at the end, he's not going to get out of breath. You know, he had no competition.
I think he wiped the floor.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's probably why, you know, if he'd been pushed to do it,
yeah,
you know, then he would have. That's why they have
those. I think
those,
he was
like,
French as well. Maybe, do you think that have something to do with it?
Right, they don't sweat, the French, do they?
They do not sweat.
That's definitely
the French.
Not true.
There is no word for sweat in French.
He was French.
He was French.
I think his name was Guillaume.
Guillaume,
a very French name.
Very French.
So they did a full marathon, did they?
They did a full one. Yeah, the kids just
say 2.5 hours.
The kids,
isn't great for
the
a
kids
mile.
Can run a mile. I think the best time for the kids running a mile is like 5 minutes or something.
Damn.
It was quick.
That's, what the fuck?
That's impossible.
They're quick kids.
How old are we talking?
These kids were probably like 13, 14, maybe.
Damn, that's I mean, the world record used to be the 4-minute mile. I'm sure that's been broken. So
yeah,
was,
Roger Bannister.
Yeah.
I remember he did it. Like,
these kids
were
finished like five. I think it was like 5 minutes, 5.5 minutes or something.
That's
pretty good.
Impressive.
Yeah, they were really going for it though. They were racing. Like, there's two kids. One of them tripped over right at the end. They were racing so hard.
Damn.
The rest of them trickled in sort of like between 7 and 9 minutes. I would say.
I don't believe this at all. Yeah. Even like this, it's the 4-minute mile is insane.
Yeah, 4 minutes is insane crazy. For a mile, yeah.
Although I think now that's quite common. But back then, when they didn't train, when they just drank a couple of pints a mile and then smoked a woodbine and went down there.
It's incredible that they accomplished as much as they did back then.
On a diet
they would turn up. They didn't even have the right gear. They would have like soulless shoes.
Yeah, just
they'd
shit.
Be drunk. You know, they would have like a dress shirt on and those. You know those sock hold up things that businessmen wear. Yeah, they would just turn up like that. And
it's Roger Bannister running the mile.
Yeah, it's exactly
dressed in a business suit. He appears to be wearing Wellingtons.
He's holding his Saturday papers, and he is really running,
smoking a woodbine and putting some Brittle cream in his hair before heading off. And it's a world record. He went back in time with just in any reasonable shape. This man's a Superman. Incredible.
Yeah, I'm
gonna say something. Talking about sport, let's go Mets. We fucking beat the Phillies in we're working our way towards the World Series. We've got we won the Division Series, now we've got the championship and then the World Series if we can win these. God bless the Mets. This has been such a crazy season if you're a Mets fan.
Sports.
It's been amazing and I love it. I'm so fucking happy that we're getting a good season finally. It's been a long time.
What's my equivalent there? Oh, I want to say, shout out to Brian Kibler, who's made legend again in Hearthstone. he's having a great month.
Yeah, big shout out to the new Magic the Gathering set that came out. Really like the Where's Waldo crossover this season. Really good. Some pretty overpowered cards. The usual
I thought you'd
be
serious.
But
there is a new set.
It's good.
Well, isn't
good,
there
actually.
One like every month, pretty
There's
much?
Always a
no,
new set,
not every
yeah.
month, but.
The new Magic set's quite good, though, apparently, according to all people. It's
Duskmorn, isn't it?
Yeah, and the previous one was like little creatures, like little burrows. Yes, it was quite nice and actually pretty good.
It was really good.
People have spoken highly of it. Although, shout out to the new Lego sets that are coming out.
Shout out to the knockoff ones as well.
Wait, did you guys hear the Magic the Gathering drama?
No.
All right, this is really good.
Okay, this is interesting. I watched a bit about this the other day. So, Lewis, you'll know this. There's a format. I'm going to explain this. I'm going to assume, Sips, that you know nothing about Magic the Gathering.
I do. I know nothing about
it. Okay. So, there's a format called Commander that you can play.
Yes.
And it's
I heard about this drama, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, the idea is you play Commander with more people, and there's different cards in Commander and all the rest of it. And it was balanced. It was created by this guy called Sheldon. I can't remember his last name.
Young Sheldon.
It wasn't Young Sheldon, thank God. Right. But he created this format, and it was really popular. I'd say it's probably the most popular way that people play Magic with their friends and stuff like
so
that.
So it's called Highlander. It's one, remember, like 100 cards in your deck. They all have to be different, apart from the lands. They can be the same. But the idea is that it's kind of more casual format. It's a more fun format. It's also multiplayer. And so most of the time, it's not as competitive. It is a little competitive, but mostly it's like, I've played a lot of it with four of us. You have these sort of silly decks, and it's kind of a free-for-all.
It's really fun.
You know, it's really fun. It's a much lighter,
that sounds really silly.
More chilled version, which Magic needed, okay?
Yeah.
Carry on, though.
Okay. It's so silly, right?
Anyway, that is maybe the silliest thing I've ever heard.
So the game was balanced by this guy, Sheldon, and this committee that were like the Commander committee that would sit around and decide which cards were in and which were out. And the main rule was, let's have fun. Like the rule zero or something it was called, was basically, if a card isn't fun for everybody, even though it's strong, we're just going to get rid of it. And Sheldon dies, all right, which is real shame.
What, in Young Sheldon?
No, this is a different Sheldon. So he
13 seasons, and he finds, wait, he dies before the Big Bang.
Incredible.
That's weird.
So he dies, and the committee is now these five people, or four people, and they're balancing the game. And it's kind of unusual for this huge game to be balanced, this format to be balanced by people that don't work for Wizards. These are just some people that play the game, and they're sort of quite well-esteemed sort of community figures, if you like. They ban these cards, these four cards, that a lot of people had invested in because they were good cards, and they were like, these cards are stupid and broken, so we're going to ban them. And all these people came after them on social media and on Reddit and shit like that. How dare you? I've lost all this money because I invested all in these cards, and now they're not legal in Commander, so the value of them has crashed. You guys are the worst, blah, blah, blah. And one of them, a woman who was on the committee, of course, got the brunt of the hate. And when other people stepped in and said, look, she was the one who was against this everyone was like, what do you mean? So it wasn't even unanimous. You know, you guys just got rid of this card without unanimity and how, you know, this is bullshit. It all implodes. The people on the committee are like, this sucks. We don't want to do this anymore. And Wizard steps in, Wizards of the Coast, and they're like, we will control it from here on out. So now Wizards of the Coast are in charge of Commander and which cards are legal and stuff, which, given that the community basically had this pretty sweet deal where fans of the game who had no financial incentive were in charge of the game, now it's Wizards. And they really don't like banning cards that are popular because that they make a lot of money from that. So I think they've kind of, the Magic community has lost a pretty cool thing.
100% they've lost. Yes, yeah. Abso-fucking-lutely they've lost.
But it's the internet. That's the internet. You can't trust it these days. It's the internet is getting worse and worse and worse, and it's just becoming a couple of
bad tweets, and it feels like suddenly that represents everyone. When of course it doesn't. It represents a tiny vocal minority of people. I know what this is like, but yeah, you've got to understand though that there's probably a reason why these cards were banned, and it's because certain people who play Commander don't really play it for fun.
No,
they play in it to be lame.
Yeah,
and they come to their certain people. They come to their Friday night Magic games night with random people, and they bring these decks that are just super lame.
Yeah,
like that you can build Commander decks which are entirely full of board wipes, right? And they destroy lands. And it's like every 5 minutes you reset the whole board. And it's like you can't win. You can't have a game. It's not fun, right? You're right about the Wizards being like, a free thing that's really popular, which we kind of wanted to control anyway, and it's just fallen into our lap. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a fan, but oh well. I was wondering what the drama would be because it's not a competitive game.
No, it's not. It's not fun, like
there's tournaments. It's kind of going against competition. I think so often though, over the last 10 years, we have seen the idea of games be turned into esports, right? Everyone wants their game to be turned into some sort of professional sport with pros, you know, playing at a high level and showing off. And I think this has been the first kind of breakout of that, of like, this is a format which is largely what people play.
Mm.
There's no tournaments, there's no high level games, there's no, you know, pro scene on the Commander front. You know, there are obviously very, very well optimized and very, very good decks, sure, that you can net deck and copy. But I think it's more, you know, because it's a free-for-all format, if someone brings one of those incredibly strong broken decks, the other three people can just gang up on him and kill him, you know? And so it kind of is a little bit self-balancing. It's like in our Civ games, you know, if you do pick some broken Civ, there's a good chance everyone's going to go on you and hold you down, you know, because that's just how it works. It's not like chess, you know, and one person has more pieces than the other. I don't know. It's more of a fun thing, and it's the way things should go. Certainly, we try and do this with Games Night. Like, we try and make our miniatures games more DM'd, right? Like the way they started. I've talked about this before, but the first version of Warhammer, there was a DM. There was a guy there, third player, who was like, okay, I'm gonna allow that.
That's fun, kind of isn't it? That would be a fun way to spend your gaming time. Oh, I'll DM, guys. It's not even a game where you get to tell a story. You just have to be the rules lawyer and the referee.
Here's the thing about Blood in the Clock Tower. So we've been playing a lot of Blood in the Clock Tower, and you're going to play one with us, I think, next week.
Blimey, that sounded like an order, but yes, sir.
Yes, you are.
I think you are in. I think we are trying to get you in one
Wednesday.
As well. It's really fun.
I don't have Minecraft.
I'm not going next week. I can't do. Do I have to be there, or can I do it remotely?
No, do it remote, dude. It's a video game.
It's
a video game. I thought it was like a board game.
No.
It is. So Blood in the Clock Tower is like Werewolf. It's like Mafia, but it's more optimized. It's better. There's a lot of problems with Werewolf and Mafia. One of them, for example, is that once you're killed, you're out. A lot of the roles kind of do nothing. It's quite arguey, and there's quite a lot of like, I don't know. It's just the voting system is pretty bad in Mafia and Werewolf as well. It's like, involves just pointing and sort of very arbitrary getting people hanged. It's just not good, right?
Right.
And Blood on the Clock Tower is this very professionalized version, very polished version of Werewolf. It's really fun. And the storyteller is a big part of it, okay? And they are involved in the game. And in fact, they're involved in a game. There's a big controversy at the moment on the Blood on the Clock Tower subreddit about whether the storyteller should sort of use the rules as written or be more of a DM to keep the game balanced, to try and make it more exciting. And I am definitely on the camp of the storyteller is a player,
right?
And they want to have fun as well. And their game is to try and balance the game. So for example, sometimes you'll get a game of Blood on the Clock Tower and you hand out the roles, and the way you're supposed to do it, you're supposed to hand out the roles and then just leave them, right? For example, imagine there's a role called the empath who knows if they're sitting next to an evil player. It might well be that that empath on day one is sitting next to the demon that they're trying to kill. And maybe he gets up on day one and he says, I'm sat next to two evil players or one evil player, you know, let's kill one. And so they kill him immediately and the game ends.
Okay? Right.
The storyteller has the power to do things like, I haven't chosen which of these players is drunk. Maybe I'll make the empath drunk so the demon has a better chance, okay, of surviving. So there's a lot of rules in the game where it says a player might die or a player may die or could die, right? So you kind of have this sort of, not very many, but a few fingers on the sliders, on levers, where you can kind of change the game in favor of one or the other team. And obviously you shouldn't go one way or the other.
Can you tell a cool story where I win? The that would be good.
I think we'd all enjoy
that. Yeah,
I see when you're on it next week. The storyteller is supposed to be neutral.
No. You're a friend of mine, though.
But neutral doesn't mean completely hands off, in my opinion. And I think that it has caused a bit of a divide. Like, I understand, but this game again isn't competitive. It's supposed to be fun. People are supposed to be having fun. And I think if the townsfolk feel like they have no chance to win, it's not fun. Or people think if all the rules are stacked against them, it's not fun either. I think we've had this happens a lot. Like, there's a few scripts there where because there's a lot of scripts and they have 20 characters on them, when you set a group up, you might have a group of 7, you might have a group of 15. Those two games are going to be very different, right? Because in the 7 one, you're going to be picking 7 random roles and they might not work together very well. They might not be very fun. They might be a bit one-sided.
Right.
You might end up with a situation where there's a minion called the Mazephales who can turn another player bad. And in a 7-player game, you know, suddenly 3 bad people versus 4 good people. It's really one-sided. And so a lot of the game isn't balanced. But I think that there's a lot of resistance to breaking the rules or doing your own thing. A lot of people are very much scared to mess with the system because they've played the game. Well, I talk about this a lot about game design, and I think people sometimes hold game developers in too high esteem. And I think most game developers you talk to will say, I just did it. I didn't test this 10,000 times. I didn't put this through some sort of advanced calculator. You know, I just put it out and it works okay. And I think a lot of storytellers realize that it is their job to make it fun.
So this is the problem, I think. If anyone with a friend group that plays games will understand what I'm saying, is that the people saying, I think the storyteller doesn't work, just don't have a good storyteller. And the people who say this is fine have a good storyteller. Like, if you have someone who just doesn't get it, or you don't have someone in your group of friends who plays games that can do it well, it probably does feel shitty. Just like if you ever play D&D and your DM is awful, you'd think this game sucks. Because
this is a very common thing on the D&D subreddit.
Yeah.
Someone posts this convoluted story about what's happened in their D&D session. And the answer, usually the top answer, is your DM is bad.
Yes.
Or, you know, like that's almost like always the case. And it's not that it's easy to be a DM. And it's sometimes people are learning and making mistakes. Or sometimes they just don't know how to do it. It's an art in itself.
It is. And if they're learning how to do it, you shouldn't expect brilliance. It is very hard. Like, I've played with bad DMs and great DMs. Great DM makes the game, hands down.
And the DM shouldn't just be a calculator, right? No. They shouldn't be just replaceable by a robot. They are actively involved in the game, you know, and their joy is seeing a game go down to the line. You know, if you are the storyteller and your game ends on day one, sorry, storyteller, but you've probably either been very unlucky or not done your job.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times we're playing a game in the evening and, you know, we get 8 or 9 people together. It's 8 o'clock. You know, we have a chat. We get everything set up. It takes a little while. Then you go through the night phase and give everyone their roles. That takes 20, 30 minutes, right. You know. And by the time everyone's 45 minutes in, you don't want to have to say, oh, you lost on day one. Let's start all that again. Because then people are like, well, I haven't got enough time for another game or whatever. Like, right. You know, it is. So the people who are the rules as written people are often the same people who are not in it for the fun. They are competitive. They want to win.
But there are DMs like that too. Like, I've played with DMs before who almost see it as them versus the players. And that's not the case. Like, it's not like you're trying to beat us and we're trying to beat you. But some people see it that way. So I think a lot of these arguments literally come down to the person who is DMing or whatever is just kind of not good at it. Like, they don't really understand the role. So I look forward to seeing what your storytelling is like. I'm going to critique you on a following episode of the Tribal.
For example, there's like, I don't know, there's like a story called like Curse of Strahd or whatever. It's quite famous. It's a D&D adventure book, right? And it's got this kind of, it's quite well known because it's got a lot of elements. It takes a while to do, it's a campaign that goes on for, I don't know, 12 or 20, 3 hour sessions, right? It's a long session. And if you're in a game for that long, just having you all die on the end boss kind of sucks, right? If you're playing a board game where it takes 3 hours and it's one session and you die on the end boss, come back next week and try again. I get it, right? But I think that D&D often isn't supposed to be that. It's not supposed to be, let's try and beat this book. Unless you've really sat down with the characters and really said, look, characters, are you okay with actually dying and failing? And they almost have to sign something at that point, because I think even if they commit to it and agree to it at the start, I think when it comes, when they've invested, you know, so much time and energy and love and into this story, and so much, you know, they've had these characters all built up, you know, this is why superhero movies don't end with, you know, the bad guy winning, right? It wouldn't work.
At the end of Endgame, it did. What are you talking about?
The end of Endgame.
Yeah, Infinity War, right? With the snap.
Yeah.
Like in Thanos 1. He was sitting on his, we're looking at the sunrise on a grateful universe. What a beautiful ending to a film. Should have ended there. Should have been the end of all the Marvel movies.
That would have been.
He should have just killed all of them, not even half.
No, that's what he tries to do in the second one. Because he realizes that they're never going to stop coming back and trying to write what he did. So he's going to kill everything in the universe and then rebuild it from scratch, basically like a god. And they would never have known about what happened. That's his idea.
It's a good idea.
Sorry.
It's a great idea. Maybe the best idea.
No.
Oh, can I say the Penguin TV series, really good. If you've got HBO or access to it.
Is it good?
It's really good. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Colin Farrell is unrecognizable as the Penguin.
Nice.
Really?
Absolutely brilliant performance. Really, really good. Everyone in it is excellent.
That's how I prefer my Colin Farrell. Unrecognizable.
Dude, he's so good in
this. He is good, I know.
This is probably one of the best roles I've seen him in. He's so good. And it's genuinely interesting to take a character that I've always seen portrayed as a kind of cartoonish guy with a big nose that walks, I'm the Penguin, like that, and make him actually a really interesting, almost sympathetic villain. It's really excellent. I've been really enjoying it.
Nice.
And of course, I've had lots of people say Slow Horses was worth a watch. Watch Slow Horses.
Yeah. I started watching it. I need to get back into it. We just started really season good. 3 of Industry. It's got Kit Harington in it.
Yeah, and Mrs. F-Watch is that.
He plays this, like, I don't know, posh tech, you know, eco startup guy. It's completely different to his role as Jon Snow.
Of course. He gets his dick sucked a lot more in Industry, is what I understand.
Yeah, he is. There's a lot of dick sucking happening in that show for sure. And other things.
I want to shout out the TV I watched this week. I watched Ludwig.
Oh yeah, it's really fun, isn't it?
BBC. It's David Mitchell, basically. I can't help not saying him playing himself, but I think it's hard when you have watched a It's always hard when you watch someone like David Mitchell. I've seen him so many times. I've, you know, in Peep Show and other stuff, but also in like panel shows. You know, I've seen him in panel shows for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And so it's hard when you have an actor to because a lot of these actors, we don't see them unless they're acting, right? So I think a lot of people are saying, "Oh, David Mitchell's just playing himself," but I think that's not really fair.
There's more to acting than being another character. I mean, there are plenty of actors who are considered great actors, but were basically themselves in most movies. I mean, for example, let's take Robert Redford. Right, I like Robert Redford; he's a good actor, but I don't think he's ever played someone other than Robert Redford in his movies. He's pretty much Robert Redford the whole time.
Yeah, this happens a lot.
That's fine. You need that sometimes. You almost want your leading man to be like
that. I feel like George Clooney is like that too. He just plays George Clooney. For sure.
I will say this. George Clooney can do comedy in a way that a lot of other actors cannot.
Yeah.
And I think he's been in some serious roles and he's been in some comedy roles, but he's very likable. You don't want your leading man all the time to be playing some extreme character because that sometimes is a little, it's got to be the right role. And sometimes it's kind of difficult, I think. If you've got an actor that, like Daniel Day-Lewis can pull it off, but he's
Daniel
a completely
Day-Lewis
different person.
Daniel
Day-Lewis
is fantastic. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's a brilliant actor, Brad Pitt plays Brad Pitt a lot as well in every film.
Ludwig is basically this idea that there's this sort of bumbling, ineffectual kind of puzzle solving nerd who's the brother of a detective, and the detective the detective goes missing, so he has to sort of infiltrate the office and impersonate his brother and immediately gets involved in a murder investigation, you know. And because he's sort of this genius puzzle set, his job is like a puzzle setting solver, whatever. It's great. It's a lot like Monk,
which is obviously a very popular
detective show. Yeah. It's very monkey. It's very funny. And I really enjoyed Monk, honestly. I thought it was a great show, and so I don't know, like there's something about that kind of nerd out in the real world, bumbling around, having these awkward moments with people, and I don't know, it's got a lot of it's very funny, and I really enjoyed it. So
it's a really good show.
Weird sort of bit with Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, Carl Pilkington? When I saw him on the cast list, I was like, please no.
Carl Pilkington for such a long
is.
Time.
He's in, I haven't seen the whole thing because I've only watched like the first four episodes or whatever, but he's got his face is on this picture. And when it's like as a missing guy and it's like, that's Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, I really hope
he's not going to have to do any acting. But he does a phone call and I'm like, oh my God, Carl. But actually it was fine. Oh, the phone call. I guess he had to cast for it and stuff and maybe he can act, but, it just blew my mind that he was involved in it.
Yeah, really odd.
Good though. Good to see
him. What's it called? Ludwig.
Ludwig.
It's on BBC iPlayer. I recommend it. You'll like it. It's very British.
Right.
Very homely. My parents will enjoy it, you know, and probably laugh at the wrong reasons, at the wrong places, you know.
Right.
But it's good. I had fun.
You recommend a high
can
a
recommend
big, is that the main shout out for this podcast?
I think so. What else did I want to shout out today?
More so than the Jingle Jam, more so than Wizards on the Coast,
the Bournemouth Walk,
the B-Mouth Walk.
Can we get some loose news?
Yeah, do we have any?
Yes, that we do.
Loose news. It's loose news.
It's technically Sam's news.
Sam's news.
He's the guy who
puts he's together. The news guy.
Let me see what
hot
I have
off
this
the
week.
Press from the news desk.
There is a Unreal Engine powered Hurricane Milton simulator.
What?
So the
that was quick.
Basically, Unreal Engine. I don't know if you know this, but Unreal Engine, Epic's Unreal Engine, is being used in so much TV now. It's insane, and movies too.
Really?
Like it's kind of started to become like. Let's not bother CGIing stuff. Let's just do it in Unreal Engine.
Oh.
The Unreal Engine are properly selling it to movie makers in Hollywood and as a way to create backdrops and just really quickly create things in next to no time and so much cheaper. Because computer graphics are almost at the point where you can't tell for a lot of it. Especially if they're wearing a mask.
The user
or something,
interface
you know.
For the weather weapons.
Yeah. So the Weather Channel have got an immersive weather presentation tool powered by Unreal Engine, showing how a storm surge is coming in. Like, I've got a little picture of it here. I'll link
it. I've also got my own weather immersion tool. It's called Going Outside.
Right.
That's a lie. You never do that.
No, yeah. But sometimes when I do, I feel like I'm in a simulation. So it achieves the same thing that the weather network is trying to peddle.
But I mean, you've always seen these really crappy, like, I was watching when the election came, I was watching like some of the old election broadcasts, and they had some really old, like, 3D models of the prime ministers and stuff that looked like they were out of bloody, you know, Lara Croft Tomb Raider hexagonal boobs.
Yeah.
Type shit, and it was bad. But and now there's still, it doesn't matter though on like weather reports and a lot of things, you know, when you're trying to, a lot of these things just need something quick and dirty and or silly and funny, you know, to just keep people's attention. And so having some poor weather girl be washed away in a 9-foot storm surge by Unreal Engine, I think is pretty funny. Anyway, next up, Nintendo, their next thing. Do you know what it's going to be called?
Wait, their
an
next,
interactive
sorry.
Clock.
An, their next
an
thing.
Interactive clock.
What does
the
that
Nintendo
mean?
The Nintendo Sound Clock Alarm. It's called Alarmo.
of course it is.
This is not a joke. It will be available early 2025. It's $100.
Alarmo.
But if you're a Switch Online member, you can get it now. An interactive alarm clock called Alarmo. In addition to playing sounds inspired by Nintendo games to wake up the user, the clock reacts to body movement by playing other sounds from the company's games.
What do you mean?
I guess if you jump up and down, it's like, yahoo, waha, wee.
Or maybe the traditional boing, boing, like the boing sound that Mario makes when he jumps in the older games.
You can set up 35 different scenes inspired by Super Mario, Zelda, Splatoon, Pikmin, and Ring Fit Adventure. You will... In the morning, you'll experience immersive sounds and music from the game you picked. You can rise to the sounds of Mushroom Kingdom with Mario waking you up. Oh,
I just
see.
I'm seeing some of the notes on here. It says move your body to quiet the alarm, so it can detect your movement. But then there's a message: if you get back into bed within an hour of the alarm, it will start going off again.
Yes.
I can't wait for my mushroom to rise. My Princess Peach immersive experience.
It's quite little. That would be a good wake up music.
Good idea, Nintendo.
In the middle of the night, it plays the doodle-doodle-doodle. The fucking ghost in the corner of the room. What a banger.
Well, as soon as you close your eyes to go to sleep.
Great. Oh, that was good. Okay, man. That's a good one.
That's good.
Okay, so I don't know if you remember in Ubisoft's Watch Dogs, there was like a pair of glasses that let you scan NPCs who were walking around on the street, and you could like discover facts about them, what their name,
like Google Glass,
criminal
or whatever,
record,
right?
And stuff.
Yeah.
Two people have essentially created this tech in real life.
Great.
Using Meta's smart glasses.
Fantastic.
Providing a scary glimpse at our future.
Well, so someone looks at me with their glasses on, and it pops up with like, you know, facts about who I am and shit.
So two Harvard students have built working smart glasses that use facial recognition technology to automatically identify someone via their face.
That's really bad.
Not only that, right. But then those glasses could use that information from their name to track down and quickly, like, I guess using AI, figure out their address, phone number, family photos.
Brilliant.
And
yeah, but then it's just going to be like on Minority Report or whatever. You know, you're going to walk in and... Greetings, Mr. Yamamoto.
I see.
You
know, had your eyes,
it's going to be
out.
People are just going to fake all their info immediately, and get there'll be programs that block all your real info from being fed to these things and stuff. Don't worry about
they've
it.
Made,
don't stress
they
yourself.
They have made
out.
A detailed guide on how to protect yourself online. You can remove yourself from data sources like PIM eyes and Fast People Search and facecheck.id. They apparently will let you delete your face if your face is on there. So you can be invisible. You could have like a blurry information. which is kind of even cooler, honestly, than being recognized. Right, look out, Joe Rogan and Triforce. Google's AI research assistant, which is called Notebook LM. Okay, I don't know if you've heard about this. It's basically a groundbreaking tool with the power to distill text into realistic sounding podcast style explainers, right? Like little explainers. And potentially, because I mean, already, right, when you've Googled stuff, you might have noticed it's starting to say, these are what AI has found at the top. Have you seen that, right, when you're Googling stuff? And so this is the next thing. It's like, would you like a little, or basically an AI-generated text summary that they then read out? So you can kind of submit anything. So a Redis has submitted a document containing of nothing but 1,000 times the word poop and fart, like written over and over. And the hosts of Google's AI-generated podcast spent like a while trying to distill deeper meaning from that. The document poop and fart is a real useful guideline for how to spell the word poop and how to spell the word fart. You know, it's like this whole,
it doesn't just know what it's doing.
It's just nonsense. It's like a hamster running in a wheel. It's, you know, the whole thing is just a pointlessness. I assume the real value of it is, like, you know, I need to learn about this thing for school. Make me I can't be asked to read the book. Give me a podcast version. And I guess that will be helpful for some people. It'll be helpful for many things, I'm sure. But it will also generate a lot of misinformation and a lot of dumb shit on the way. Yeah. So
emphasis on dumb shit. It will be real, generating a lot
real
of
dumb shit.
I wonder if we're going to have... I don't think it would be workable, but you know the way the Amazon stores, where it was like you just walk in and the AI knows what you've picked up, had to be proofread by people to train it. I wonder if they're going to have banks of people looking over some of these answers and being like, well, that's gibberish, because it could cause real problems. If someone was like, quick, I'll ask an AI how to do CPR. And it's like, first, place your buttocks on the person's mouth. You know, it's like, what, it doesn't know what the fuck it's doing.
Mr. Yamamoto. I notice you've bought a lot of maxi pads today.
It just doesn't know what the fuck
God
it's
bless
doing.
It. I hope that this AI-driven future is all presented by the automatrons in the Fallout universe, you know, with they have like that, the broken sentences with that would be perfect. I would love that. That would be so good. That. Yeah.
Yeah. So in France, there has been this hunt called On the Trail of the Golden Owl.
Mm. Right.
It was a book of riddles published in 1993 by this guy called Regis Hauser.
Sur le chemin de Libourdor.
Right. Wow.
Very nice.
It contained 11 difficult puzzles and a hidden 12th one. This is a bit like fucking Ludwig. To decipher the exact location of an owl token. So there was this hidden thing, which was too difficult at the time.
This is not the first time this has been done, by the way.
I had a whole bunch of French relatives visiting recently, and I had to speak a lot of French while they're here. And I noticed, my French is pretty rusty, but I noticed over the course of the week, speaking to them in French at length every single day, my French was getting much better.
Wow.
Oh, it's impressive.
That is the best way to learn a language, is to go there.
Well, I've already learned the language. It. I just don't practice.
Yeah. Well, yes.
The language
relearn.
Very often.
Well, but you forget stuff. Anyway, the hunt has come to an end, and someone posted, don't go digging. We can confirm that the Golden Owl countermark was unearthed last night. So there was this huge cult-like following of owlers in France and also all over the world, searching for this thing, because the guy, Becker, had previously...
Oh, people love searching for things. What was the last thing? The last lose news, you talked about the sixth actor or whatever, and people have to track them down as well.
So
people love this stuff.
Basically, there was this guy who made this, Hauser, who this guy who his pen name was Max Valentin or whatever, and he basically had this owl made up out of gold. It's £125,000 worth of It's worth a lot, apparently, like this gold now.
Well, it's worth 125,000.
And they buried a replica, and it's only just been found. So, but it wasn't, you couldn't simply find it with a metal detector. You had to submit it with all the answers to the riddles. And anyway, it's been found, which is fantastic. Because it's been found. It's, I mean, in a sense, some people are disappointed because they're like, oh, you know, I wanted to solve it myself. I wanted to find it myself. Only one person can, right? So in a sense, like, it's a bit of a spoiler. Now it's been found. It's kind of taken away that mission, you know?
Yeah.
But I think people, it's about the journey too, right? I think people have had a lot of fun going to France and finding, like, hunting for it.
Yeah.
You know, we need a new one.
Right.
Well, so there was one in 1979, a book called Masquerade by Kit Williams. And it was a treasure hunt puzzle book. It was like a series of pictures. And if you follow the pictures, it would lead you to the treasure. And it's sort of, you can read about this. If you look up on Wikipedia, Masquerade, or Masquerade, however you want to say it, was the name of this book. And it ended, they published in 1979. On December 11th, 1988, the Sunday Times printed a story accusing the winner of the Masquerade contest of being a fraud.
Okay.
They basically, a guy who was a fraud. So here we go. Thompson's business partner, John Gard, was the boyfriend of Veronica Robertson, who had previously been a girlfriend of Kit Williams. And allegedly, they convinced Robertson to help him win the contest because they were both animal rights activists, and he was going to donate the profits to an animal rights cause. The Sunday Times alleged that while living with Williams, Robertson had learned the approximate physical location of the hair while remaining ignorant of the actual solution to the puzzle. And then they basically, they didn't sort of get it. They hadn't actually got it. They just sort of tricked and said, oh, it's in Ampt Hill, which is this town. But they didn't say how they'd got there. And it was something to do with, you had to, like, draw lines between the fingers of this person and then that person. And it was eventually, there was a statue at a certain time of the day that would point, her shadow would point exactly to where it was buried. Something like that.
There were a series of
these. What time
of
the year, though? The sun was at a lower sun?
During the equinox. Right. Either equinox is when it's at the same point. So, it's like, this book was like, you would just have to sit and study the images. I guess back then, of course, you would just have to do this on your own or with a couple of mates. Whereas now, all this stuff can be solved collectively by Reddit or whatever. There's loads of puzzles and, you know, stuff like that are online. So you'd have more help. But the thing is, if you solved it with a group of strangers on the internet, if one of them used that to actually solve it, they're not going to share it with you. So this is just getting loads and loads of people closer to the solution.
Yeah.
And then one of them figures it out and, of course,
one
runs
of them
off
just
and
gets right through,
digs
yeah.
it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, like, again, this is a little bit like a lottery, right? The idea is that you make a book, you sell it for £5, and it has clues in it that might lead you. If you're smart, if you're lucky or whatever, if you go to the right place and work it out, and you could potentially win a lot of money. And there was this whole loads of them in the 80s. There were a load of video games as well that were attached to this idea. And there's various things, various hunts went on for a great sword and a great goblet and a great crown or whatever. And you hear about them afterwards, because I'm sure, like, James Nintendo Nerd and a few other people have done videos on them over the years. And some of them were melted down, or some of them were sold off, you know, at the time or whatever. And it was a fascinating time with these treasure hunts. But it's sort of, you're right, now with the power of the internet, it's going to be very quickly solved. But it was a different time back then. You sort of had to buy the books. It was I don't know. It obviously, the creators of it obviously realized, oh, if we sell 10,000 books, we can, you know, put up a treasure worth £10,000, you know, to do it, you know. And I feel like it's a fun idea, right? Like, you can see it being compelling, especially when, I mean, like, there's a game called Treasure in Search of the Golden Horse, right?
Wow.
It was on Laserdisc, and the cover says, win a prize of $500,000.
Wowzers. You know?
And so it was like this big kind of event.
Imagine
right?
the whole and, movie was just like a 3-second clip of you picking up a horse in Tarkov that you find, like, in a filing cabinet or whatever.
What a shit bit of treasure. Takes up two slots, is worth like 8,000 rubles. Fuck off.
I know.
Although the promoters of that contest claimed the puzzles were solvable within the allotted time frame, no one did it. The deadline passed 5 years later and the prize was donated to the Big Brothers Big Sisters of America charity.
Well, jeez. Hey, speaking of winning money, I went to the store yesterday to get some milk, and guess what they're selling as of the 9th of October? Christmas lottery tickets.
Oh, okay.
I was feeling...
I thought you were going to say
first
Feastables.
Little, and not only were they selling Christmas lottery tickets, they're also selling Cadbury's Puds. You know, the little Christmas chocolate balls?
Mm. Right. Cadbury's Puds.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's frightening, isn't it?
The lead up to Christmas just gets longer and longer and longer.
It's not even... I mean, I guess they're overlapping with Halloween decorations.
Well,
right now,
yeah,
right?
They are, yeah, because there's loads of Halloween stuff up. But then, yeah, they're starting to get Christmas boxes of chocolate and all that kind of stuff in the lottery.
I did see a couple of... the things I follow were advertising their Christmas merch.
Yeah.
Too soon, man.
Too soon.
What time is it? That's too soon.
Give me some time here.
Last bit of news. Google have made a double-sided circular Gboard keyboard. Okay.
I thought that was going somewhere else.
This is made by Google Japan. Right. So it could well have been put somewhere else. Here's a picture of a lady holding it.
You
could fit a lot in there.
It's a weird 3D circular keyboard.
It's awful.
Looks like a Mobius strip.
It does, yeah.
It looks like a visor, like a tennis, like a really futuristic tennis visor.
It looks like a hat
visor
that a lady would wear to Ascot.
Yes.
Yes, it's nuts. It looks completely impractical for use, but I really... applaud the
it looks like one of those things that a surgeon would put into your asshole to hold it open while he does the surgery deeper within.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time before someone completes Elden Ring with it or whatever.
Oh yeah, that's yeah, people like doing that. Yeah,
in fact that's probably easier than playing it with their bongos. What a weird bit of design.
Yeah.
I mean, it's they've made a bunch of them apparently, a long ruler.
A lot of this
one
stuff,
which is like a cylinder.
A lot of this stuff
is the craziest
that
one
seems
so
bonkers. When you're pushing the boundaries of what everybody else is doing, I like stuff that's nuts like that. Because you never know, although this might not be good, something might come of it where you're like, actually, if we did this, it actually becomes really useful. Or this is really good for certain situations or
they
something.
They invent all this stuff, but there's still no hourglass-shaped pickle jar. I don't get it.
I know. The hourglass-shaped pickle jar. You told me about this. Was this when we were in
States? It's such a good idea.
You heard this, Lewis?
What?
So tell him. You haven't mentioned this on Triforce, I don't think.
Imagine a big hourglass, but it's a pickle jar, right? So you got the pickles in the juice, and then when you flip over the hourglass, the juice runs down into the bottom part, but the pickles stay on top. So you can open the jar, pick out a pickle without having to dunk your hand in the pickle juice, right?
You're a genius.
And then after you've picked out the pickles, you put the lid back on, flip it back over, and then the pickles can chill in the juice again.
Yeah.
Okay, like this.
No.
That is available now.
You don't have to fish for the food.
Like this idea that already exists.
No, this is already out there.
I didn't do my research. Sorry.
So just for obviously people are listening to this, Lewis linked to TikTok of this exact item.
Oh man! Well, I'm glad it exists.
It exists.
There you go. It exists. It's out there.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You don't have to design it and have you don't have to invest.
Good,
it's
thank
already
God
done
for that.
You should be happy.
I was just about to get started as well.
I need £100,000 for 10% of your business.
And how much do you think your company's going to be worth within its first year? $1 million. Easy.
I've laid on a load of pickles for you. You need to find a way to make money off of these pickles.
Fuck.
I'm just stepping in to say I'm out. That's Duncan Bannatyne's contribution. No. He doesn't ask any questions.
It's not
he just
for me.
Says, I'm out.
I'm out.
I'm out.
Okay, yeah. I found this weird thing on the Google Japan, and I'm not sure what it is. It's called Gboard Spoon Bending Version,
right?
Which is a spoon that you bend,
and it's
got a flex sensor in the handle.
Mm.
Okay, and I don't understand it. Like, however much you bend the spoon by, it types a key. So if you bend the spoon a lot, it goes like Z. But if you only bend it a tiny bit, it goes A. And you can just type by holding a spoon in your hand.
Why?
This is actual Google.
I don't think I will ever use this thing. The pickle jar I will use.
So you hold a spoon.
I love that pickle jar.
This is amazing because there's a ton of these, and there's clearly a big department at Google whose entire job is come up with dumb shit like this. And I think this is like, what do they call it? A skunk works or something? Where it's just loads of people sitting around coming up with clever ideas, and some of them, most of them are dog shit. But the technology for this might end up being in something that's actually good. This might be useful, let's say, if not a spoon, it could be anything, for someone who's got extremely limited mobility, has access to a full keyboard. Let's say you can only move your hand. Now you've got a full keyboard just with bending a thing. That is quite useful. But for general usage, I'm not going to sit here on a spoon playing dotes. Imagine playing dota with a spoon.
I would love to see that.
Maybe that's why my MMR is
I'd love to
so
see
low.
At the international, you know, everybody sitting down with their headsets, getting their, and then this, some dude's just reclined with his spoon.
He's got his spoon. Here he is with his famous TI winning spoon. God. Oh, Tuuk, can I just say one thing about video games? I didn't know this. I spoke to someone who works in esports, and they were saying that the biggest esport in the world. Have I mentioned this before, that it's PUBG Mobile? Did we talk about this on the previous episode?
Yeah, you told me about this when I saw you. Yeah, you were telling me.
It is so big. Millions of people. It's huge in Southeast Asia. They watch PUBG Mobile. And I said, do they have like stadium events? He was like, yeah. And I said, when the players are on the stage, he was like, yep, they're on their phones. So you're looking at the players sat there on the stage, they're all on their mobile phones. Like just holding their phone up and playing.
What the is this because they've got like bans on how much time you can play PC games or whatever?
That's China.
Oh, that's right.
Or is that Korea? South Korea?
No, it's South Korea. China. I think if you're under a certain age, you're limited to, I believe it's about 2 hours a day of gaming, something like that. And then,
But they get around it by having multiple phones with games on them.
I don't think it's that so much as they use their parents' phones. Because I'm pretty sure that, I mean, that's not...
It's massive.
That's not the thing. I don't think PUBG Mobile is necessarily, it could be the biggest thing in China, I don't know. But this, my friend said this is like Southeast Asia, this is enormous. When they had COVID, all the LAN cafes closed down. People can't afford PCs. Because a lot of Southeast Asia is very poor. So the average person really doesn't have money to buy a PC and play Dota and stuff like that. Yeah. So they would go to LAN cafes. COVID killed all the LAN cafes. I've got friends from like Malaysia who owned LAN cafes. And as soon as COVID hit, they had to shut down. And all the kids they wanted to keep gaming. So they all moved on to mobile games. And so PUBG Mobile is like enormous. They all fucking love it. But it's crazy.
It looks like Fortnite.
Yeah.
It really does. It's really cartoony.
Got to be simple graphics.
So yeah, they got to trim it down for mobile. Yeah.
Oh, it's weird watching all these pros on their phones.
Yeah, it's really odd.
Holding their phones, like, it's so weird. Oh, it's so funny. Oh, wow. It's like they're on a train. Do you know what I mean?
It's so odd. It's not for me.
Wow, what a world
that is the future of esports. It is mobile games.
Well, sign me off, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm definitely.
This is Lewis signing off. He does not want to be do these esports.
I'm done. Yeah. Well, there you go. That is our podcast. That was great podcast.
That was good.
Really good one. Yeah,
loved it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. We love you all.
Yeah,
and thank you for supporting
a few people have said this to me. Sips, have you played Trading Card Game Shop Simulator?
No, I bought it though. I will play it. I'm almost finished Satisfactory. I'm almost done. Phase 5. When I'm done that, I'm gonna play
that. Okay, I think
it's
tough. It.
Phase 5, isn't it?
It's
my god, I've been playing Phase 5 as well. It's tough.
Yeah, I've made a lot. I made a little dent.
Well, we'll talk about that next week. For sure.
Indeed.
All right.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Love you. Bye. Bye. Bye.